Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of one of my favorite authoresses. Her name is Ellen Gundersen Traylor, and we probably carry, probably somewhere between 8 and 10 of the books that she's written through the years. She's been a prolific writer. She's written a number of wonderful books based upon the Bible and biblical stories. And then, of course, she wrote a couple of books. One was, as I remember, The Priest. The other was The Oracle. And they were, of course, stories dealing with what was going on at the present time, dealing with Israel. They had a lot of political implications in them, and of course Ellen has never written a third in the series, so I've left those of us who've read her books suddenly in suspended animation, waiting for the third book to appear. Well, anyway, of course, I called Ellen recently on a different subject, and we got talking about why she had not written the third in this series of books, and she told me about really how she had been treated by the major publisher. We won't necessarily mention the name, but this is a major publishing house that supposedly publishes good Christian books for good Christians. And it was very obvious that they had done everything they could to discourage her from actually writing the third in this series of books. In fact, preventing her two previous books in this series, The Priest and the Oracle, from being circulated. And as I contemplated the things that I know about how they manipulate our reality, certainly the story of Professor Quigley, who is a historian, probably the outstanding historian of the last century, at least according to the professor of history at Harvard University at the present time, is referred to Professor Quigley as the leading historian of the last century. But what was so interesting, of course, was that Professor Quigley had written a book going into the background of the secret society that controls America, and this was called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. Well, what happened was that somebody came and bought up the publisher, Macmillan, destroyed the plates to the first half of the book, lied to Professor Quigley for a number of years of telling him they were planning to republish the book when they had no plans to republish the book. The whole story was to be suppressed. The American people were to never to know about the secret society that was the forerunner to the Council on Foreign Relations, which always provides our Secretary of State, the Director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the Chairman of the Federal Reserve System, whether the Democrats or Republicans are there. And it was only really by an act of fate that the book was actually ever gotten back in print. We have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells the story, and many other instances that I have personally encountered where books have been actively suppressed here in the United States. So with that as the background, Ellen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't we just sort of get a little bit of the background of your books, of The Priest and the Oracle, because we do carry them. Mm-hmm. Sydney, have you republished those, or are we still...
No, I have some of the remaining copies, and when they're gone, then I will be doing that.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break. While we're doing the break, I'd like you to just tell us a little bit about the storyline, because there are two fascinating books, and they contain a lot of very relevant information about things that are going on today that most Americans have never heard, and I couldn't help but wonder if maybe that was why they went so far way out of their way to suppress your books and keep the average American from reading them. We're going to be back in just a moment with Ellen Gundersen Traylor, certainly one of my favorite authors, and certainly one of my wife's favorite authors as well. Ellen, you go ahead and pick up the story.
Okay. The Priest and the Oracle are based on research that I did in Israel and Jordan and parts of Europe also, England, Germany, Rome, and so forth. And they grew out of research that I was doing on the city of Jerusalem for a book for Harvest House Publishers. pardon me. I was assigned by Harvest House to do a book for the 3000th anniversary of Jerusalem in 1996, being the anniversary of David's taking of the city, which was celebrated by the Jews in 1996. And Harvest House had me do the book Jerusalem, the City of God, which I'm sure you also carry. And while I was in Jerusalem and Israel studying for that book, I learned a lot about modern-day Israel and the temple movement in Jerusalem and the whole issue of how would the Jews rebuild their temple in Jerusalem where they believe it should stand when the Dome of the Rock is standing there right now, and that is an Arab sanctuary. And so that really piqued my interest, and I began investigating that while I was over there and talking with rabbis and people involved in the Temple Institute in Jerusalem. And I asked them, okay, I understand that you're going to build your temple. I understand that something will have to be done with the Dome of the Rock. I also know that there are certain things you have to find or locate before you can proceed. And among these are the ashes of the red heifer, the breastplate of the high priest, or at least a replica of it, and then, of course, the high priest to oversee the activities in the temple. How are you going to find your high priest? And I used my time while I was over there looking into that, as well as just the whole history of Jerusalem. Got very interesting answers. And
hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Ellen had actually gone over to Europe and to Jerusalem to research a book she was doing on Jerusalem. Actually, we carry that book through our ministry. But while she was in Jerusalem and traveling in that area, she had an opportunity to get in touch with the people from the Temple Mount Institute. And, of course, it was very obvious that before they can rebuild the temple, there's certain things that the Jews are going to have to have. They're going to have the ashes of the red heifer. They're going to have either the breastplate or a replica of the breastplate of the priest. And then they're going to have to find the priest himself. I mean, certainly, how are they going to find the descendant of the priest who carried out the sacrifices in the temple over 2,000 years ago, or 2,000 years ago? And so, as Ellen is talking to the rabbis there at the Temple Institute, who are determined they're going to rebuild the temple, but of course, how are they going to build it with the Dome of the Rock in that area where the temple should be rebuilt? Obviously, there are a lot of unanswered questions, which Ellen then would subsequently explore in her book, The Priest. So you pick this story up there, Ellen.
Well, in my investigations, I met some very interesting people, both Jewish and Christian and secular, and scholars from every area of interest regarding such things. And I began to develop a storyline in my mind, and I based my characters in the book The Priest on people that I met over there. And my main character in the book is David Rothmeyer, who is a composite character based on a couple of different people that I met over there. And he's kind of an Indiana Jones figure. He is a scholar and a linguist, and he is hired by my version of the Temple Institute, which is the Temple Consortium in my books. And the rabbis in the Temple Consortium are based on people that I met over there. And so I had them hire David Rothmeyer to do whatever he could with his linguistic and archaeology background to track down the genealogy of the high priest of Israel.
In other words, they need the priest because they have to have somebody of the direct line of the original priest to commit to perform the sacrifices in the temple which is to be built.
Right. And, you know, many people have asked me, well, how much of what you wrote in these books is really true and how much is just fiction or speculation? My answer to that is that both the priest and the oracle are based on reality. They are not nonfiction books. They are novels, but they are based on real things, real people and real events and things that are going on in Israel, not the least of which is indeed the tracing of the lineage of the Levites and the Kohens, who are the descendants of Aaron and Moses. And Aaron, of course, was Moses' brother, and Aaron was the first high priest of Israel. And the Levites are the priestly caste or class, and the Kohathites or Kohanim, they are another priestly caste, and the high priest of Israel would be a Kohen or a Kohanim. Where does that name come from? It comes from the father of Aaron and Moses. So the Kohanim are kind of the broader category, and the Levites were a subgroup, which mainly they performed in the service in the temple, in the musicians and the sacrificial system and so forth. But the high priest himself came directly from the lineage of Aaron and would have to be actually traced back genealogically and genetically.
And I thought that was really what was so fascinating, that they have the ability now, by the use of genetic typing, to actually find out who the high priest would be. I mean, he would have the direct genealogy traced right back to the ancient priest and then back to Aaron.
And so you can see how there are various branches of science that would contribute to this search. In tracing genealogy, you need linguistics, you need archaeology, you need genetics, you need biology. And I have my character, David Rothmeyer, being a linguistic archaeologist, and then some of the people he's involved with in the story are also geneticists. And, you know, Dr. Stan, one of the really thrilling things about my work over the years, and I've written 17 books, is that time after time after time when I have been involved in my research, right when I was needing something, right when I was up against a wall and didn't know which way to go and didn't have an answer in my research, some new information would come to the front. New, really new cutting-edge information would arise. And this happened when I was writing The Priest, because it was at that time that the whole science of genetic testing through saliva samples arose. And that came about literally in a synagogue one day when a Jewish scientist, a Jewish geneticist, was sitting in a service in a synagogue one day, and he was noticing similarities between the Cohen males who were involved in the service, in doing parts of the service. Well, now he knew that the Cohen line was the priestly line. And he began to wonder if there would be a way to find out if the Cohen line has remained pure all these years, or if it has been diluted or actually destroyed over the centuries, so that it is, so that a Cohen cannot actually be pinpointed. Okay? And so what he did right after that service, he began to study this. He gathered people that he knew to be Cohens, Cohen males, got saliva samples from them, and began to study those samples and discovered that within the DNA of the Cohens, Cohen males, there is a specific genetic marker that does not exist in any other family line, does not exist in any other line of humanity. And his research became so involved that it became a global search. He actually began to trace down and discover Cohen lines, Cohen families and Cohen males in every racial group in the world. There are, of course, Israeli Cohens, there are Norwegian Cohens, there are African Cohens, there are Chinese Cohens. There are people who are Cohen by blood all around the world. They are related. They may not look alike, they may not have the same background, culture, language, anything similar to them, but within their blood is this unique genetic marker that indicates that they actually are part of the Cohen line going back in history. For some reason, their family in the dispersion, the great dispersion, you know, of Israel, there have been two huge dispersions of the Jews in history. One was into Babylon, and the other was at 70 AD when they were dispersed throughout the known world. And the dispersion only began to end in 1948 when the Jews began to return to their own country. But until then, Dr. Stan, the Jews were spread all over the world. They would have intermarried with every race, every culture, all over the world. But what is just incredibly fascinating that this man discovered was that there is a unique genetic marker that identifies Cohen individuals all over the world, no matter what race, or where they live, or when they lived, or whatever. This actually was on 60 Minutes about 10 years ago. Leslie Stahl did a segment regarding this very thing, and how amazing it was that this Cohen line has never been destroyed, it has never disappeared, and in that Cohen line somewhere, Dr. Stan, is the one true high priest of Israel. He's yet to be identified, yet to be found, but you can believe and you can bet that the Jewish people involved in the temple movement are looking for him. Now, that is what the priest is all about. That's what my book, The Priest, is all about, and that's what David Rothmeyer is looking for.
Well, it's a fascinating adventure story. It's an Indiana Jones-type story. But of course, it is so significant to know that the Jews really do believe with all their hearts, and they dedicated their lives to rebuilding the temple and beginning the sacrifices again. And of course, your stories, both the priest and the oracle, are the quest of David Rothmeyer to find that. It really, it's a fascinating story. I can hardly wait for the third volume to come out, and so we'll be talking a little bit why that has not come out as yet. But certainly, you had an opportunity to meet and talk to many of the people over there. Of course, they're also looking for the Ark of the Covenant. I think that they have found it. I think they know where it is. I think everything is ready for the reestablishment of the Jewish temple. We'll go right ahead.
Well, the Oracle, then, is a sequel to The Priest. And first of all, I guess I should say that in the...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
For the sacrifices, and then of course the breastplate of the high priest, which of course seemed to allow him to understand what the will of God was. And there was a little pocket there, and there's some dice or something else, or some sort of stones. We're not sure exactly what they were, but all of these had an important part as far as the Jewish people were concerned in their traditions in preparation for the construction of the temple. And, of course, the return to the sacrifices of 2,000 years ago. And there are people in Israel today who have dedicated their life in preparation for the coming sacrifices in the temple, which is not even yet built. But that was the basic background of the story of the priest and the oracle. And pick the story up there, please.
Okay, well, anyway, so we have these different quests going on in the books, and all of it geared toward the effort to rebuild the temple and to bring about the Levitical system again, which we know, according to Scripture, will happen. The exact timeline of it all, how it relates exactly in prophecy to the rapture or the Antichrist and all that, there have been various interpretations by scholars, and I don't get into that. But the purpose of my books is simply to talk about what's going on today. And, of course, it all leads forward into the future, but I'm not a prophecy writer like LaHaye and so forth. Interestingly, people who like the Left Behind series really like The Priest and the Oracle. So if you've read them, you would want to read The Priest and the Oracle. It gives you a little more contemporary view of what's going on.
Well, of course, the problem is that they have not gotten the coverage they should, and we don't necessarily have to mention the name of the major corporation that actually... did they buy out Harvest House, or what happened?
No, Harvest House did not do The Priest.
All right, fine. So anyway, a major Christian publisher published the books.
Okay, and so anyway, you may be able to begin to see, as you hear me talking about what these are about, that there would be some controversy surrounding the topics. I mean, this is touchy stuff, right? Because you're getting into information and efforts and so forth that are incendiary. And I was told many times by people in Jerusalem that when it comes to building the temple, whatever it takes to do that will start World War III. And so we're talking about efforts that could bring about absolute Holocaust.
And, of course, basically probably going to involve, in one way or the other, the destruction of the Mosque of Omar, the gold cap mosque that goes back to the 600s. Mm-hmm. And, of course, if that were to happen, why, it would inflame the entire Muslim world. And, of course, I think that many people think that that war will come about, certainly. But anyway, pick the story up there. So there was controversy about what you were writing, the facts that there really is this plan to build the temple. Is not imaginary, it's not make-believe. There are people who are totally dedicated to rebuilding the temple. They're simply waiting for the destruction of the Mosque of Omar so they can rebuild the temple.
And so the books both came out, both within a couple of years of each other. The Priest came out in 1998. The Oracle came out in 2000. And the Priest had been doing fine. And then the Oracle came out, and all of a sudden, the original publisher was absorbed by another publisher. And I don't want to name names, okay? But the second publisher who absorbed the first publisher and took over the books suddenly declared them out of print. I was not even informed that this had happened. I didn't even learn that this had happened for some months. And what cued me that something was not right was that I began to see vast quantities of my books on the internet at like $2 a piece. And I could not, being a bookseller, I have access to the major distributor in the country of books, period, Ingram Distribution, and they were no longer available through Ingram Distribution. Now, here I am, the author and a bookseller, and I'm suddenly, because of my bookselling activities and my need for my own books, am realizing there's something really wrong here. Something is not right.
Okay, you hold that thought, and we'll be back in just a moment with Ellen Gunderson Traylor. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Ellen, you picked the story up right there.
Okay.
Something is not right. So
something is not right. I'm finding quantities of my books on the Internet for $2 a piece. I'm finding they are no longer available through the major distribution outlet that they've always been available through, where bookstores can purchase them, okay? And so I thought, what in the world is going on? I had not received any notice of any change in my contract or my relationship with the publisher or anything. And so I went in and called the publisher, got hold of their distribution arm, not Ingram, but the part that belongs to the company itself, and I told them, I said, what in the world is going on with my books? And the lady who handled my account looked into it, and she says, well, I really don't know. Let me look into it, and I'll get back to you. So she calls me back a while later, and she tells me, your books have been declared out of print. And I said, what? Yeah, she says, I have no idea why. I don't know what's going on. And I said, well, but you have thousands of them printed. What have you done with them? And she didn't know that I knew that there were quantities, vast quantities on the Internet for $2. And we're talking brand new books here, not used books, okay? She didn't know I knew this. So I just said, well, what have you done with all the copies of the book? And so she says, well, I'll have to look into that. So she came back to me and she said, they've been destroyed. And that is the word she used. She said, they have been destroyed.
Why would anybody destroy a perfectly good book that you could market?
And I said to her, Dr. Stan, I said, by destroyed, you mean you have dumped them on the remainder market, don't you? That's what you mean by destroyed. And she was rather quiet, and she finally said, well, yes, actually. When they say a book is destroyed, they're not talking about bonfires, okay? They're talking about taking the book and selling it off to the lowest bidder, basically.
So the author won't get a
doesn't get a royalty.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And Chris Ellen had the books published by a major distributor, and suddenly she notices that up on the Internet are, you know, large numbers of her books, and they're being sold at $2 each. She calls the publisher. Publisher says that the book is out of print. And, of course, then they tell her the book has been destroyed. And then it turns out that even though this book was selling very well and there was a great demand for it, they had simply dumped these onto what they call the remainder market, which is where you can buy the books for $2 each. And what they're doing is really doing everything they can to punish the author so that they don't get any royalties on it. And they're not trying to get this thing distributed through regular channels. It's simply you buy them on the Internet at a great price. But there is no incentive for authors to write books when they don't get a royalty. And so suddenly Ellen realizes that they're doing everything they can to disrupt the distribution of her book. And the company will not distribute the book through the regular channels, the Amazon, the Borders, things like that, and the regular distributors would get to the bookstores. And so Ellen is wondering, why are they doing this? So pick the story up there.
Well, so I called my editor friend who was the head of the first company that actually published the book, okay? The original publisher who had become absorbed by the second publisher. I called him. And I told him what was going on. He was absolutely floored by this. He couldn't believe it. His company had just been absorbed by that new company, by that bigger company. And he immediately called them and absolutely insisted that they stop this behavior and that they reprint the book and get it back out there. which they did. They did. Immediately reprinted the book, got it back onto the market as it should have been, and then shortly thereafter, Dr. Stan, a few months later, they did the same thing again that they had done before.
And of course, this is a pretty standard technique that's used. I remember I mentioned Professor Carol Quigley, suddenly, according to Samuel Huntington, a professor of history at Harvard University, referred to Professor Quigley as the leading historian of the last century, and yet his book, Tragedy and Hope, initially published by Macmillan, and then somebody came in and bought up Macmillan to suppress the book, destroyed the plates of the first half of the book, and did everything they could to suppress the book. Now, why wouldn't they want to sell it and make money? Because it was information they didn't want out there. Same thing happened to Stevenson, the lady named Stevenson, who actually had written a book called Kiss the Boys Goodbye, went into the background of the men we abandoned in Vietnam, the soldiers, but even more than that, the CIA and drugs. Her book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, was distributed to stores, called back by the publisher, and all the copies disappeared. She moved up to Canada. Her name was Monica Jensen Stevenson. We have interviews with her. You can hear the stories from her own lips. She moved up to Canada, gave the books to another publisher. They published the book in paperback form, and then accidentally shredded 5,000 copies, all the remaining copies of the book.
They shredded them, huh?
They shredded them. And, of course, Monica actually believes, the fellow said, it was just a mistake. We didn't know what we were doing. And Monica doesn't believe in the conspiracies that I believe in. But this is standard. Of course, the next book she turned out dealt with Vietnam. And, of course, her publisher got sued on that. And they had to pull the copies of that book off the market. So these things actually happen today. There are books that they do not want you to read. They're either withdrawn, they're shredded, or they simply are dumped on the market so that you discourage the individual who's published them from writing books. After all, if you can't make a profit, how long did it take you to write those books?
A long time.
You're talking maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yes, sure.
And so then, of course, there's no reward at all. This is how you suppress books, and it's done not infrequently here in the United States. I run into this all the time as I wanted to do talk radio interviews with the authors of books. And I'll get the publicist, and I say, I want to get the author onto the program. We'd like to help you sell the book. And they will never get back to you. There's no way possibly I can contact that author and get the information out on the book, because they don't want the information out, and they use the publicist simply as a barrier so that neither I nor anybody else can get to the author. And then, of course, the book doesn't sell, and they say, oh, shucks, it wasn't a very good book. They actively discourage the dissemination until people understand that there really are people out there who want to control our reality and mold our ideas and rewrite history so that we can't get accurate history. Why, you can't understand why we're in the trouble we are as a nation today. So you pick up the story there.
Well, that's pretty much the story. Well, I guess I should tell you what I did about it. After this happened the second time, I raised mayhem. And I threatened lawsuits and so forth, and I... I actually was rather surprised that it was effective, because they were certainly bigger than me. But I told them absolutely that they had to return my rights to me and do so with a certified letter, or that I was going to sue them. And it took months of badgering and threatening on my part before it finally came to pass. And I got my rights back to those two books. And I bought up a good quantity of the final printing of each of them. I'm just about out of them now.
Well, we carry the book. We think it's a great book. And really, I hope that you will get it back in print. And I hope that you'll write the third in the series and that you'll get that printed yourself.
Well, I'm 10 chapters into that, Dr. Stan. And I know you've asked me many times over the years about it. And I guess it's good that you finally understand really what, why. You know, what happened to me? You know, it was very discouraging and very, like, sure, I can publish it myself. You know, I've done that. I've published other books by myself. But you don't get the material backing and the marketing that you get through a traditional publishing house. That's all there is to it. So it's been very bewildering and very frustrating and very depressing. You know, I do believe God has his hand on everything, that there's a reason for everything that happens, that he can take the worst situation like he did with Joseph and make it turn around and be used for our good. I know this. But at the same time, it makes it awfully hard to sit there and write wondering, you know, will I succeed with this? Will I be able to really get it out there where people will even know it exists? And so it is hard. It's very frustrating. And I'm sure that there are publishers who would just assume that I did nothing but write the biblical novels I used to write, which is wonderful. I love the biblical novels. But I also have a real heart for these issues and for what is going on today in Israel. And what, you know, I try to pay close attention to what goes on. And I love Israel. And I want to do something to help Israel. And so I feel very frustrated because I believe that these books that I've written about it, not just the biblical novels, but the contemporary novels, are telling a story and giving information that absolutely makes a difference and has to be out there. I have received more mail and more emails regarding The Priest and the Oracle than any other books I've ever written. And they are bridge work, too, Dr. Stan, between the Jewish community and the Christian community. That's one thing that I've really learned about those particular books. I've gotten many emails and even phone calls from Jewish people saying that those books had opened their eyes to so many things and that they had made them understand a lot of things and appreciate Christians like they never had before. So, you know, there's a real ministry for these books, and so I don't know. You know, I don't know if I told you this. There is a movie company interested in making The Priest.
I would hope so. I would think it would make a fact. I had thought that your reading of what a wonderful motion picture this would make. In fact, I thought, you know, what we need is to get Steven Spielberg involved in this. It would be a great, great situation. His being Jewish, and I think that he would be very interested in this story.
Well, he likes books that try to bring people together, you know. That's one thing he tries to do. And these books certainly do that. So, who knows? I mean, but right now there is some talk of that. I just spoke with a producer today, as a matter of fact. And so we'll see what happens. I believe their story is not over. You know?
I don't think it is either. I think God has a special place for this story. Anyway, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to give us a call. But Cindy, we carry a number of books. I know we have one on Jerusalem and John and Luke and Cindy. Anybody can go up to our website and see all the books that we do carry that Ellen has written. And I have read all of them. My wife has read all of them. They're wonderful, wonderful historical books. The one on Mary Magdalene was wonderful. Do you have a website you'd like to get out for our listeners?
Yes. And people can order off of that, too. And it's ellentrailer.com. And my name is spelled E-L-L-E-N-T-R-A-Y-L-O-R. So ellentrailer.com, and they can see the books there, or they can contact me.
All right, fine. What do you think the chances are that Hollywood might really be interested in doing this? Do you think would Tim LaHaye help you at all? I do have contacts with Tim. If you think he has, I know he has a lot of contacts in Hollywood. He's trying to work there to try to clean up the films that we're seeing.
Well, I think that, you know, since The Priest and the Oracle have been compared to the Left Behind series, and in fact, they're where they are advertised. It has been, you know, if you like the Left Behind series, you'll like these books. That's been kind of the mantra that's gone with them in the advertising.
I think it ought to be, if you like Left Behind, you'll love The Priest and the Oracle.
Well, thank you. won't say that to him, though.
That would be wonderful.
Let me know what he says.
All right, fine. Well, when I talk to him next time, I will just mention this and even offer to send him copies of the book, because he has a lot of contacts, and he's a wonderful man. He loves the Lord, and of course, he's made a lot of money, and he's just as humble as he could be, and it's really everything he does is to try to educate people and make them understand the significance of the biblical, or the biblical significance of the times that we're living in. And so it certainly am, but I just hope.
Well, you know, I hadn't remembered this till just now when speaking about them, but when all of this was going on back 10 years ago or 8 years ago with The Priest and the Oracle, I contacted Jerry Jenkins because he has a writer's group, you know, kind of a, what do you call it? It's an organization for writers to help writers succeed. And I contacted him and told him what had been going on with the publisher. And he didn't act too surprised, really. And he said, are you sure you want to bite this off? You know, he said, are you sure you really want to pursue this, because if you do, you know that you're going to have a fight on your hands. And I said, well, yes, I imagine I will. I did go ahead, and I fought, and I won. But it was a long, hard fight. I don't know if he would even remember any of that, but I did talk to him. I think it would just be great if Tim would look at the books, and if nothing else, maybe give me some ideas. But he's certainly been down this road with the movie thing.
Right, and I said somebody else actually had done the movies, and he wasn't very happy with the movie. He was supposed to have had some say in it and didn't have any, and the movies were out, and they, you know, they were pretty good. Maybe they could have been a lot better. The story did get out, but of course they had all, I think, 10 or 12 books there. They could have had they could still be putting out one every year or 2 years and have another 20 years to go, something like that.
Right, right, kind of like the Star Wars saga.
Right, and or like the Indiana Jones, this latest one. In fact, I thought it was really pretty good. It was sort of panned, but I'll have to admit, I really like the Indiana Jones, and I think one reason I enjoyed your book so much is because your hero was certainly an Indiana Jones-type character. And but the you know, the excitement, really, that it was a hard book to put down. That is the criteria that I use. If I don't want to put the book down, I'm reading until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when I've got to be up at 6. Why? It's got to be a good book. And let me mention to our listeners that Ellen's books really are phenomenal. If you like biblical novels, that will really give you the based solidly upon the scriptures, and certainly giving you an idea of what's going on there. And Ellen does a tremendous amount of research on every book that she writes. And certainly, but the Priest and the Oracle were really very, very unique and novel, and I think a wonderful understanding of what's going on today, because I truly believe we're living in prophetic times. I believe that there is a war that's coming to the Middle East, and it will involve the United States. I believe it's only a matter of time, after all. When you get into an economic contraction, when you have a debt that you cannot repay, there is no possible way we can ever repay our debt. It took us 100, 200 years to go $1 trillion in debt, and certainly within the last month, month to 6 weeks why we've accumulated another $500 billion in debt. This next year we'll probably accumulate $2 trillion in debt. Remember that it took $200 to accumulate $1 trillion, and now we may very well accumulate $2 trillion in one single year. And of course the only solution is to destroy the currency. And the way you do that is to get into a war. And I feel the war is coming, and somehow it's going to play into God's plan. And we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program. Our guest has been Ellen Gundersen-Traylor. One more time, would you like to get your website out there?
EllenTraylor.com. EllenTraylor.com. I'd be happy to communicate with you.
Well, Ellen, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, you've encouraged me to...
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
I can't keep track of all the books. There's one on Jerusalem, there's one on Melchizedek, there's one on Mary Magdalene, but go up on our website of RadioLiberty.com. You can certainly see them. We carry the priest, we carry the oracle. Wonderful reading, inspirational reading. I think you'll really enjoy it. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like information on books that are uplifting and stimulating and will help to draw you closer to our Lord. And then, of course, something else we have is rather unique. We have the music of Newell Oler. And most people say, Who was Newell Oler? Well, Newell Oler was a pianist. He used to play at a hotel in Texas. I've forgotten which town it was, but we went down there one time, had an opportunity to meet Newell. We love his music. We play it on our radio station. We actually came up with the idea of offering it to our listeners. The CDs are not that expensive. And for wonderful, restful piano music. Was really something so unique. Everybody who's ever heard his music has been taken by it. I know it was the way it was with me. We were in a gift store, and I think it was in Solvang, California, and I walked in, and you're sort of looking around, whatever is there, and I heard this music in the background, very quiet, very restful, and I was so taken with it. And I actually asked the people where they'd gotten it. We bought a couple of the CDs, and then eventually we got all of his CDs, and we carry many of them here at Radio Liberty. A wonderful Christmas gift for your family, for your friends. What do you give the people who have everything? Well, you give them the CDs by Newell Oler. And of course, wonderful, restful music that really lifts your soul. And it's not Christian music, it's just the old songs that we grew up with a long time ago, without a beat, simply with a wonderful expression. So if you're interested in knowing more about the CDs we carry, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, I want to mention the difficult times we're moving into. I mean, we're moving towards the collapse of our economic system. It did not happen by accident. It happened by intent. If you haven't read our pamphlet on the financial meltdown, our pamphlet on the history of money, heard my talk on the financial tsunami, and got the syllabus that goes with that, and read it, and understand where the gold supposedly is, well, we don't know where the gold is, but we know where some of the gold is and how it's being handled and who's handling it. And it all comes from, of course, government documents that I believe at least are partly true. And then, of course, if you are interested in laying in long-term food, I can tell you that the price has suddenly been slashed dramatically, not because the quality is down at all, because the people who are putting it out have been in this business. Well, the business is almost 40 years old. David Sibley's been with it, running it for a good long time. And of course, but because of competition of other people coming into the market, why he really had to drop his prices to be competitive, and he's dropped them below the competitors. If you're interested in long-term food storage, why, give us a call. We'll be glad to send you the latest price list. And then, of course, we'll also mention, if you do not yet have a Berkey water filter or you'd like to get a catalog on the sort of health products, the vitamins and minerals and herbs and similar things that you really need to maintain your general health. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Yesterday I was coming down with the sniffles, felt a cold was coming on. I took some Alibiotic, which is a combination of various herbs. It has the allicin, the garlic, it has elderberry juice, it has oil of oregano, and a couple of other things in there, and some 5,000-unit vitamin D capsules. And why, today I just feel great. Anyway, if you'd like to know more, our number, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com, and we'll be back in just a moment with the next hour. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and hopefully for the next hour they're going to be the views of Mr. William Grigg, who, of course, is the former senior editor of the New American magazine. And Mr. Grigg is not answering his telephone. I hope that doesn't mean he's not at home. I talked to him just today, and he mentioned that he would looking forward to this evening. I'm going to ask our producer to call again a couple of times and just see if he can't get through to him. But anyway, of course, we're going to have to do open lines then, because I don't have anything prepared. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you're out there across America and would have a question or comment on any subject, or if you'd like to talk perhaps what's going on financially, what's happening spiritually, if you'd like to talk about population control, if you'd like to talk about medicine and the Christians, what they're doing to poison us with the medicines we're getting, the proprietary medicine being released by the government through the Federal Drug Administration, products that aren't deadly as far as the health of our people are concerned. And if you wonder why it is that we have so much more heart disease and diabetes in America than comparable groups of the same age in Great Britain, people of the same basic stock, why we have an explosion of autism in America and other neurodegenerative diseases, why we have, of course, an explosion of juvenile diabetes and asthma and autoimmune disease and inflammatory arthritis in our children. I mean, all of these things are a direct product of the fact that they're poisoning our children, and they're poisoning us as well. And if you haven't, of course, heard some of the work that Dr. Blaylock has done going into the background of what's going on, the fact that the vaccines that they give us, the vaccines, of course, the influenza vaccine that they try to get everybody to take. And if you ever listen to what they say, why, of course, 36,000 people die every year of influenza and its complications, and that's why you've got to take a influenza shot. People die of the complications and not necessarily of influenza. They just die of pneumonia. But because 36,000 people die every year of pneumonia, and most of them are elderly with no immune response, why you should take an influenza shot that's loaded with things that will suppress your immunity, and you already have a lowered immunity anyway. And if they were, of course, giving the elderly the vitamins and supplements and minerals and the things they need to increase their immune system, they wouldn't be dying of pneumonia. But you see, there are too many people in the world, and there are people really who see nothing wrong with older people dying. But even more, of course, unexcusable is the fact that they're prescribing the influenza vaccine that contains aluminum, which, of course, decreases the immune system, contains a full dose of mercury. Why would you give older people mercury when it's going to destroy their minds and predispose them to Alzheimer's disease? Why would you give them vaccines which many times contain foreign vaccines? I mean, I should say foreign viruses or parts of foreign viruses. And the difficulty is most people do not understand the fact that many of the things that they're doing in the name of preserving our health are harmful. Why would you give a vaccine laden with mercury to a pregnant woman in the first trimester or to a six-month-old child when it wouldn't do any good unless you were trying to do harm? Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We were just talking a little bit about, of course, what's going on behind the scenes. And so we're talking about the fact that they're encouraging everybody to get an influenza shot today. And I will tell you that as a physician, I never took an influenza shot. I knew so many people who took the influenza shot, came down with influenza-like symptoms, and people say, oh, well, they didn't really get influenza. Well, maybe they didn't. But, of course, what the influenza immunization does is lower your immunity, and you make you much more susceptible to getting either influenza or a cold or something else. Because, of course, the products that are in there, have a profound impact. Well, we've got right now a Brent calling from a Rapid City, I guess, is that South Dakota? Hi, Brent, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine, and do you have a question or comment?
Well, I wanted to just say a few words to you. I was listening earlier, and well, I guess today I'd almost kind of hoped I'd have a chance at some point to talk to you and William Grigg, but I just wanted to make a comment to you, Dr. Stan. We talked, you've talked this week quite a bit about the election.
Right.
And, you know, so many people are distraught over what's happening, and I mean the reality is when you think about the election of Barack Obama, it certainly doesn't paint a very bright future. It may be hope for some people. But to those who hold the Christian beliefs that we do, it certainly isn't hope. But, you know, Dr. Stan, after the election, I was listening to you. I think you had William Kennedy on that night and perhaps one other. Oh, Barry Shamish. And then I took some time, read my Bible, and was praying. And I just wanted to share with you momentarily a few things that the Lord seemed to impress upon my heart. And that was, Dr. Stan, that he brought to mind Ahab, the king Ahab. And then, of course, you remember Elijah. And Ahab was one who brought a very strange religion to the nation of Israel. And Elijah was a faithful prophet during that time. And then the Lord took my mind, was it over to Ezekiel, where he said, I looked for a man among them who would stand in the gap and make up the hedge. Tragically, that's a note of sadness because he said that he found none. And the Lord kind of directed my mind through history. Every time it looked like that God's plan was done for, he found somebody. He found Noah. You remember he found Moses. You go through history, he always found a man. And he brought to my heart and to my mind the thought that, yes,
well, that's all. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our regularly scheduled guest isn't here, so if you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. We've got Brent on the line now calling from Rapid City, South Carolina, and he was saying that after the election, he went to the Bible, and he read the Bible, was reading the scriptures, and it came to mind, of course, the story of Ahab, the wicked king, certainly married to Jezebel, but that at that time there was there was a nobleman, there was the Elijah at that time, a faithful prophet, and that all throughout these centuries, whenever, of course, God's people were in trouble, there was always a faithful man. God would always find a faithful man who would be out there in the front lines, of course, proclaiming God's truth. So go right ahead, Brent.
Well, bringing that story now to kind of a conclusion, God brought to my mind, I'm always looking for somebody in the darkest points of history who will stand for what's right, who will be counted. And let's not forget, Elijah didn't have a very easy life. In fact, if you will remember, over in the book of James, it said that Elijah was a man subject to like passions as we are. Yet, he prayed that it might not rain, and it rained not on the earth for the space of 3.5 years. And, you know, Dr. Stan, God's not discouraged, and he's not wringing his hands with this election. He knows exactly what's happening. He's observing my life and yours and the listeners tonight, and he's looking for some people who are willing to take a stand in this dark hour and to be accounted. And the Lord brought to mind He said, I sustained Elijah in a very difficult time. They chased him to take his life. And you remember he even won a great victory on Mount Carmel and overcame the prophets of Baal. And it wasn't but days or weeks later he stood on the mountain discouraged and said, Lord, am I the only one? Just go ahead and take me now. I'm the only one left. And then God reminded him, I have 700 who haven't bowed the knee to Baal.
And that's absolutely true. And I'm sure that God is in control today. He's allowing these things to happen. Maybe he's bringing his judgment on our land. But all we can do is wait and watch and see and be true and faithful to our Lord. Because he's in charge, I agree. But we are to be doing the best we can. This is why I do what I do, and I'm sure you're doing the same thing you do. And I hope you'll pray for God's support of our efforts and, of course, God to spare at least the people who are faithful to him here in this country. But I think he's going to bring a terrible judgment on so many unsuspecting people across our land. Anything else? I've got other people hanging on the line. Have one parting thought before we let you go.
I can let you go with that, Dr. Stan. We had a nice blizzard this week, and so we're all huddled down here waiting on the snow to leave.
Well, of course, I talked to one of my friends who's got a farm up in North Dakota, and he says he just can't get his crops in. You know, it's going to probably lose a good deal of his crop unless something dramatic happens, but God, I'm sure, has a purpose in that
as
well.
God bless you.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right,
fine. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. It's got to be open lines for this hour because, of course, we don't have our regularly scheduled guest. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Hedley Burton calling from Michigan. Or is that Hedley calling from Burton, Michigan?
The last name is McKee or Magoo or whatever you want to have,
right.
But you're wonderful, Dr. Stan, and you have a lot of people coming on, and I know some other things, but a lot of things ought to be exposed to the real to the American public, and I mean we're being bamboozled by our government. I mean, not all government's bad, but I mean it's okay. You take one agency, you got the good people and the bad people within that agency, and the other, we doubt the bad. Then there's the other people, you know, that are, you know, the high-ups at what, Rockefeller Center and these other Fords. Plus, I don't know if I heard on your program, but a lot of these nonprofits, I think I did. You might, I believe you did now. Anyway, a lot of these nonprofits, and I've been thinking about that too, but they're hiding their money in there, but they got other purposes. I mean, they're bilking the government and people by not paying the taxes, and they got other agendas, they're being protected, they're under the guise of non-profit, and they should be, you know.
Well, I think what people have to understand is that great tax-exempt foundations are being used to change America. The great fortunes, the Rockefeller fortune, the Ford fortune, the Carnegie fortune, and many others, the tax-exempt foundations are using their money to encourage the communist movement, to encourage socialism and Marxism and centralization of power in government, to finance, of course, it was the Rockefeller Foundation that financed the Kinsey effort, Dr. Kinsey's effort to destroy the sexual mores of our society, which started Hugh Hefner and the Playboy magazine, who was inspired by Kinsey, who was financed by the Rockefellers. There is this, I believe it is a demonic effort on the part of people who have gotten their great wealth because they've sold their souls to the devil, and they are using those great fortunes that they're using today to destroy America. And it's so difficult for people to believe that people of great wealth would actually support communism and socialism in this country. But I would simply ask, why are the multi-billionaires like Warren Buffett and George Soros and Paul Volcker and the others backing up Barack Obama? Certainly we find out today that he's gotten about $770 million for his campaign. Nobody has ever gotten even hardly half that much. $770 million given to him largely by people of great wealth. And as I point out, does anybody really believe that these people of great wealth are giving the money to get Barack Obama elected so that he can raise their taxes so they can pay more money to the government? And anybody who believes that has got to be very, very naive.
Yeah, you're dead on. But oh, okay. One thing I like to spook you with, and yes, you say, well, we're coming from beautiful Monterey Bay and whatnot. Anyway, you're spooking us, Monterey Bay. You're coming from beautiful Monterey. You're coming from beautiful Monterey Bay with oil slicks and everything else over a quadrillion of sardines that are floating dead. That's why we don't have a sardine industry out there. But anyway, I like to spook on that. But anyway, that. I haven't been out to California, but I might be out there this year, Rob.
Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful spot, and we live in one of the most beautiful parts of California. That's the North Shore of Monterey Bay. Anything else, or we're going to have to let you go here.
Okay,
unless you have a question.
Okay.
Do you have a question? What? Do you have a question at all?
Okay. How do you atone for 50 million abortions? I mean, God is pulling us. There.
Well, you do not atone for 50 million abortions. I believe God
That's
is going to bring his judgment upon America and, of course, the people who've been promoting this sort of thing, because I believe this is repugnant to God, and I believe God weeps for every one of those unborn children who will never have a chance to run or to sing or to laugh. And people are going to be held responsible. But remember, this was the Supreme Court. The wicked people who were placed on that Supreme Court are to destroy the moral fabric of our society. And this was the court, or certainly was dominated by the Masons from 1941 to 1971. 2 years later, they passed Roe versus Wade. A number of Masons were on that court at that time. But the other people had been placed onto that court to destroy the moral fabric of our society. And when you understand that, Hedley, why you can understand what's going on today. Our job is to try to get people to understand that behind everything that is happening politically and culturally and ideologically and militarily are powerful spiritual forces, and there really is a supernatural, there really is a God, there really is a Satan, and there is a spiritual battle being waged today. And we see the end result of it in abortion and homosexual degradation and the wars that are being fought overseas and the slaughter of the Iraqi people, and probably close to a million have been slaughtered. And we're torturing people. America, the American Christians are going right along with the torture, because after all, if we don't torture them, why, they might hurt us. And without ever stopping to think that most of the people we've been torturing certainly were not even terrorists. In fact, they'd been terrorists. We wouldn't let all of them have gone, and yet we did. They were torturing innocent men, and when Christian can tolerate that, why, of course, they do not deserve to have God's protection. That's the problem we face today, Hedley. We're in real trouble as a nation, because there's no incidents in all history where a nation has turned against God, where God has not withdrawn his support from that nation.
That's right. And now I'll say goodbye and God bless.
And thank you. God bless you too, buddy. Thanks so much.
Great talking to you. Over now.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And it's just going to be open lines because we just don't seem to have our regularly scheduled guests as we ordinarily would at this time. So again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Scott who's calling us, and Scott is calling us from Cincinnati, Ohio. Oh, hi, Scott. Are you listening to our station back there in Cincinnati?
Oh, absolutely, Dr. Stan. It's good to talk to you again.
Well, it's good to have you here. Do you have a question or comment?
Oh, yeah. Dr. Stan, I need to pick your brain a little bit. I was trying to explain the posse comitatus thing you were speaking about a while back
right.
to a friend of mine.
Right.
I think I messed up. Can you explain that exactly what that is for me, Dr. Stan, so I can kind of get this out?
Well, of course, you can certainly, one of the best places is go up in the Wikipedia and Google. But basically, during the period after the Civil War, the Northern troops were stationed in the South. And, of course, this many times army troops commit terrible atrocities, and they were committing terrible atrocities against the Southerners. And, of course, there was a tremendous outcry against the stationing of American troops and having them used against American citizens. Posse Comitatus law was passed in the 1870s. To prevent that from happening, we'll be right back.
Thanks, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Of course, basically, of course, a little bit more to the story than that. Posse Comitatus basically said the president could not use American troops against Americans unless, of course, it was insurrection or in case it was a national emergency specifically called by the president. And this law then it stood from the 1870s until 2006. And in 2006, in October of that year, there were two pieces of legislation passed. One was the Military Commission Act, which did away with the right of habeas corpus and laid the background for the foundation for the establishment of a military dictatorship in America. And the second was the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act. And the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act effectively repealed the Posse Comitatus Act to the point where even the liberal senator, Leahy, had actually come and stated that this was tantamount to laying the foundation for a military dictatorship. And even though Senator Leahy is a very liberal senator, he actually got that legislation recently repealed. In other words, to restore the Posse Comitatus Act so the president could not, at his whim, use the American troops against American citizens. President Bush signed the legislation, but added a signing statement saying, I will not abide by the law of this land, and I will be able to use those troops against the American citizens. That's the background of what it's all about, Scott, and I think we should be frightened to death. Why would the president put a signing statement on there so that he could use the troops against American citizens, or the man who succeeds him, and I think, of course, he probably knew that Obama would be succeeding him. I believe this has all been very carefully scripted out by the people who really run America, the people who control both political parties, and, of course, they control the initial conventions, the nominating convention, and there, of course, they pick the candidate we will vote for in November. The important convention is the nominating convention, because there, of course, they pick the Republican, the Democrat nomination, and then we go to the polls in November, and we vote for the candidate of their choice. And the fact that there were other candidates, third-party candidates, who were totally ignored by the major media. In fact, Scott, have you noticed they've never yet told us how many votes that Chuck Baldwin got or Alan Keyes got or certainly that any of the other candidates got, certainly the gentleman who ran on the Peace Green Party. They totally suppress any information. They never allowed to engage in the debates. Totally ignored by the media, and you never know what they stand for unless, of course, you read their internet articles. And of course, Chuck Baldwin was my choice for the presidency. He's a man of integrity. He's a man of principle. And I wish, of course, we'd had an opportunity to have that information. In other words, Ralph Nader, of course, who was running for the, I believe, on the Green Party ticket. But Ralph Nader didn't get mentioned, nor did Chuck Baldwin, nor did Alan Keyes, nor did any of the other third-party candidates. So we have the choice of voting for the establishment's candidates, and then, of course, nothing is going to change. Only I think things are going to get a lot worse. But not because Obama is in there, but because the whole economy of our nation is collapsing. The whole economy of the world is collapsing. And, of course, there's nothing that can be done at this stage economically to stop it. They can maybe slow it down. They can put it off. They can delay it. But we're in real trouble, and hang on for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is going to be an open lines program, so our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. We have Scott calling from Cincinnati. He was asking us about the Posse Comitatus Act, and I explained to him what it was, the fact that it had been repealed so that the president could use troops against the American people, that Senator Leahy had actually got the legislation repealed so that that the president could not use the troops against American citizen. But when George Bush signed that legislation recently, he put a signing statement on there saying he would not abide by the law of the land. He would refuse to enforce the legislation. In other words, he wanted the ability to use military troops against American citizens, which really means, of course, that Barack Obama is going to be able to use the military against American citizens, and that's a frightening thing to contemplate, considering Mr. Obama's leftist, far leftist, radical background. Anything else you'd like to ask or talk about, Scott?
Oh, Dr. Stan, I just wanted to say that I was kind of proud of California's my birth state where I was born, and I was proud that they did okay on Proposition 8 out there.
You know what the explanation for, and it's really very interesting, that many people believe that the reason that Proposition 8 passed here in California, and it didn't pass, I think 400,000 votes or something like that, but the reason it opposed was because so many black people went out to vote for Obama, and most black people have a Christian outlook, and they believe in the family, and they of course know that abortion is being used here in America to kill black children. This is one of the major purposes behind it, and because it was because of the black people went out to vote for Obama that they voted yes on Proposition 8. And as a result, it did pass. And it didn't pass by a lot, but it's not going to do any good because you have to understand that this whole issue is talk about what the real issue is. The real issue is that what the homosexuals are doing is in violation of God's law. Nobody ever mentions that. But the other thing is that the homosexuals are being manipulated in this whole thing. Their leaders, of course, are out to destroy them. And what the average homosexual doesn't understand is the AIDS epidemic was specifically designed to kill off gays. How do we know that? Well, because it began in the gay population. Why did this disease begin in the gay population? Well, there was a vaccine that was used. It was used in New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles. It was a vaccine for hepatitis B. It was an experimental program to determine whether this hepatitis B vaccine was effective. And the young, foolish homosexuals volunteered for this test. And in San Francisco, why, of course, 75% of the people who took the hepatitis B vaccine contracted AIDS, and most of them are already dead. And it was in San Francisco and Los Angeles and, of course, in New York City where they carried out this experiment. It was in San Francisco, New York City, and Los Angeles where the epidemic began. And I believe this was a conscious effort not only to kill the gays but to kill the blacks, because this disease has its predilection for blacks, which is why almost half of the people who died of AIDS in the United States are black. And it's about time that the homosexuals realize they're being manipulated, that the blacks begin to realize they're being manipulated, because they're people who hate both groups. And as a Christian, we cannot hate them. We have to tell them what they're doing is wrong. It's going to kill them. And, of course, if they don't repent, why, they're going to spend eternity in hell. That's what the message should be. And we argue back and forth about the use of the word marriage. But the homosexuals are being... Everything is being done to get them all riled up and to be pushing for this, and, of course, to get the Christians mad at the homosexuals, and homosexuals mad at the Christians. But when society breaks down, who is going to be there to defend the homosexuals, to keep them from being destroyed by the angry mobs, to keep them being sent to concentration camps, as they were in Hitler's Germany? The effeminate homosexuals were sent to concentration camps, but the hierarchy of Hitler's occult movement, Nazi movement, was all made up of homosexuals. People don't understand that. Beautifully covered in a book by Scott Lively called The Pink Swastika, and most of the Nazi leaders were homosexual.
Dr. Stan, one last thing before I go, sir. Right. Thanks for all the books that you provide in your ministry, and I recommend to everybody in the audience to get Dr. Stan's Brotherhood of Darkness.
Did you enjoy the book?
Loved it, sir, and I also loved, I read it some time ago, the History of Money. You got a beautiful pamphlet out regarding the... I might have the title wrong, but...
No, you got to write the History of Money.
Thank you, sir.
God bless, and thanks very much for being with us. That was Scott calling. Good night. Scott calling from Cincinnati. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Right here at Radio Liberty. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and we really don't have anything prepared, so we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, and we'll talk about what you want to talk about. But there is a fascinating article that appeared in Newsweek magazine on the 3rd of November. Now, that is it's probably delayed, but the date of the magazine is the 3rd of November. It's written by Richard Haass, H-A-A-S-S. Now, that name may not mean much to most of you there in the listening audience, but Richard Haass is one of the most powerful men in the world. Richard Haass is the chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations. Richard Haass is one of the 120 members of the Trilateral Commission, which is the organization that, of course, supervises the Council on Foreign Relations. Council on Foreign Relations is sort of a farm club for the power elite. And, of course, the power elite works pretty closely through the Trilateral Commission. And of course, Dick Cheney has been a member of the Council on, pardon me, the Trilateral Commission. He's also a member of the CFR. But where the real power lies is with the Trilateral Commission. And in fact, all during the Bush administration, Dick Cheney ran the White House. He ran foreign and domestic policy. In fact, when George Bush was asked to appear before the 9/11 Commission, he refused to appear unless he could have Dick Cheney there holding his hand. He said, Dick Cheney's got to be able to come with me or I won't appear before the 9/11 Commission. Why did he have to have Dick Cheney there? Why? Because, of course, whenever you notice George Bush's hands move, there's a little string on it, and, of course, there's Dick Cheney pulling the strings. And Dick Cheney has a staff of 150 to 200 people. Why does the vice president have to have a staff that large when his only real function is to be there to accept the presidency if the president were to die, and, of course, to act as the chair of the Senate and to chair the meetings of the Senate? The reason Dick Cheney needs a staff of 150 or more people is because he runs the government. He always has. He's run it for 8 years. And most of the tragic and disasters we've had, we can thank Dick Cheney for. But Dick Cheney, along with Richard Haass, comes from the membership list of this small elite group that runs our country. It's called the Trilateral Commission. You can get the membership list from August Review. Pat Wood's website. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you're out in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I was going to refer to this article that appeared in the November 3rd issue of Newsweek magazine by Richard Haass, and it is entitled Memorandum to the President-Elect Regarding Foreign Policy. From Richard Haass, President of the Council on Foreign Relations. And there's what the article says. There are only 2.5 months, 76 days to be precise, between Election Day and your inauguration. And you need every one of them, those days, to get ready for what you are going to have to do. And it's really such an important time. And so we're going to be discussing the trail of this last year, and of course there's not going to be any more campaigning, and governing can hardly be more different. And let me see if I can get this up here and get my glasses focused. The former is necessarily done in bold strokes, and to be honest, often approaches a caricature. All candidates resist specifying priorities or trade-offs during the time of their campaigning because, of course, they don't want to have to necessarily tell people exactly what they're going to do. You won the election, but at a price. And some of the things you said were better off left unsaid. Even more important, the campaign did not prepare the public for the hard times that lie ahead. And, of course, Richard Haass knows what lies ahead. He knows that our whole economy is going to collapse. And, of course, we're moving towards a period of chaos and crisis. That's my commentary, not what he says. But let me read, of course, that last sentence for you. All candidates resist specifying priorities or trade-offs unless they forfeit precious support. You won, but at a price. As some of the things that you said were better left unsaid. Even more important, the campaign did not prepare the public for the hard times to come. There will be days when you will wonder why you worked so hard to get this job. What will make it so difficult is not just all that awaits, but the constraints that will limit what you can actually do. When George W. Bush became president nearly 8 years ago, the world was largely at peace. The U.S. military was largely at rest. Oil was $23 a barrel. The economy was growing at more than 3% a year. A dollar was worth 116 yen. The national debt was just under $6 trillion, and the federal government was running a sizable budgetary surplus. And then, of course, he goes on to talk about how the world has changed since then. And then he goes on at one point to talk about what the president should do. And Richard Haass tells the president of the United States that he should listen to his vice president, the person who would be closer to him than anybody in the world other than his wife. He should listen to the vice president. Why should the president-elect Obama listen to Joe Biden, who's a political hack? Why? Because he's, well, of course, Richard Haass doesn't mention, but he's been a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's tied into the establishment, and Richard Haass is telling Barack Obama that he better listen to Joe Biden because Joe Biden is going to tell him what to do. And once again, you're going to see the president, as with President Bush, being a figurehead, and the vice president, who's under the control of the establishment, instructing the newly elected president of the United States. The article, you'll find it, Newsweek magazine, November 3rd. I suggest you read it. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And let's go to Craig, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Craig. How are you doing?
How you doing, Dr. Stan?
Doing just fine.
I had a couple questions.
Go right ahead.
Just on how you feel. Basically, one of the things I always thought about was the Iran war. You know, if we go to war with Iran, I always come from kind of a biblical stance, and whether we would, if we went to war with them, wouldn't that kind of push back a lot of the timeline? I guess if we were in close to the end days, whether we would push it back, you know, if we went in there and, you know, I kind of think if we went to war with them, we may be, we may lose. You know, we won't take it over as easy as we would the other countries because they are already backed with all their missiles and that type of stuff. And just you know, I hope I'm wrong on it. You know, of course, I support our military, of course, but it would just seem to be a shame if we went there and you know, and it just doesn't seem like in you know, as far as biblical references, last days type of stuff.
Well, first of all, let me point out that if we were to go to war with Iran, it would not be a conventional war. We would not send troops in. Why? Because they've got a massive army, probably far more troops over there than we do, and they're already fairly well equipped. Actually, Iran is a very, very powerful nation. It's got about 70 million people in it, but it's got some very, very sophisticated military weapons that it, of course, got from Russia, and it has not been systematically weakened as Iraq was. Remember, we were bombing Iraq almost every day for 10 years before we attacked it. Iraq was a basket case. It was no threat to us or to anybody else. But, of course, we went into Iraq because it would be easy to defeat, and we did defeat it. I mean, just a few days, we had our troops in Baghdad, and we could have entered the war and come home except they didn't want to end the war and come home. What they did, of course, was to dissolve the Iraqi army and dissolve the Iraqi police force and dissolve the Iraqi civil service and to close all the factories so people wouldn't have any jobs. And they had no electricity and they had no water. And then they closed down a lot of the schools. At least they tried to. Fortunately, they didn't get them all closed down. They closed down a lot of the hospitals. They created total chaos so that the people would be restive and so that there would be chaos and we could justify keeping our troops there, because the plan was always to keep our troops stationed permanently in the Middle East so we could dominate that area because there's so much oil there. Now, as far as Iran is concerned, if we were to go to war with Iran, it would be primarily a missile war. They would use cruise missiles. They'd use bombers. But we would certainly not be sending major forces, military forces, into Iran, because if we did, it would be a bloodbath. But the problem is, if we do go to war with Iran, what will Russia do? What will China do? Whenever you start a war, well, you never know how it's going to end. And my concern is that God has a plan, and I believe that the plan that's laid out in Ezekiel 38-39 is underway. And even though our leaders may have their idea of what's going to happen, I think there are people who do not want to go to war with Iran. Our military doesn't want to go to war with Iran. I hope and pray that Obama was really sincere when he said he thought we ought to talk to Iran, because I think we ought to talk to Iran. Iran is not a threat. Iran knows very well that they were to bomb Israel, there would be retaliation against them, and they're not stupid at all. I mean, Ahmadinejad is a caricature, but of course, you know, the real power over there is the mullahs, and Ahmadinejad has the presidency over there. Is not like the president of the United States. He has very, very little power. And the mullahs over there would really like to negotiate with the United States. Perhaps Obama can negotiate with them, that we can come up with some sort of an understanding. Certainly, if Iran had nuclear weapons, why should we be concerned? The Chinese to the east of Iran have nuclear weapons. The Pakistanis to the southwest have nuclear weapons. The Indians to the south have nuclear weapons. The Russians to the north have nuclear weapons. The Israelis to the west have nuclear weapons. Why should we be so concerned about the Iranians having nuclear weapons? What we ought to do is see if we can work out some sort of an accommodation with them. And that would, of course, be what men would do. But behind all of this are powerful spiritual forces. I share your concern, because I have a feeling that the scenario laid out in Ezekiel 38 and 39 may not be too distant. And the plans of man and the plans of God, there's an infinite quality of difference.
I totally agree with you as far as the one thing I support about, Barack Obama. I voted for a third party, like yourself, I think. But I was a Ron Paul supporter, but no one seemed to want to listen back a year ago or so. But what I did support was what I see happening now as far as the church goes, is that with a Democrat, they seem to be more on their toes, and they seem to protest more with a Democrat president. It seemed like with a Republican, they seemed to be going with whatever. They didn't seem to protest much or have anything have any problems with what was going on. But I feel like our current president is basically a Democrat, but with no opposition.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think that George Bush has done more to destroy Christianity and the Republican Party than any president I can ever think of, and I think that there will be opposition to Obama. I think you're absolutely right, and I hate to say this, but it may be the best thing for America that Obama won. I could never have voted for him or supported him, but it may be the best thing for America, because I hope this will begin to wake people up. I think things are going to get terribly bad under his control rule. And as things get bad, people are going to be willing to listen to what you're saying and what I'm saying and what other people who are knowledgeable are saying. And hopefully, number one, why, of course, they'll understand the spiritual nature of the battle and come into a personal relationship with God. And then, of course, hopefully that they will join us in this crusade to try to take America back. Can we take it back? I don't know. But I think we're called upon to try, and I believe that's my calling. I believe God's put me where he's put me for that purpose, and I'm sure he's put you there to get the message out as well.
Well, I support you, Dr. Stan, and I appreciate it. I listen to you a lot, and I try to get the word out as much as I can. You know, the ways I like to do it is you know, with the current news, just matching up with what the word says.
Amen to that.
And I just try to, you know, wake people up that way. And if they don't want to listen, they don't want to listen. But we can just pray, and we can pray for Barack Obama, and I hope it unifies the country like they're talking about, and I hope it works out well.
Well, you see, the thing is, I think you have it exactly right. You are not going to change their attitude. God is going to change their attitude. But your job is to tell them. And if they accept it, fine. If they don't want to accept it, that's fine, too. Don't get frustrated when people turn their back on you or ridicule you because you're on the right side. And one of these days, they're going to come looking at you and say, you know, we used to think you were crazy, and now we're afraid you're not.
Well, believe me, I'm in the Detroit area. plenty of jobs, people leaving, losing their jobs right now. And
but of course, the thing is, yeah, I really want to talk to them, explain to them really what's really going on. Ask them why we actually are subsidizing the companies that are going overseas and taking jobs out of this country. And are you aware of the fact that, of course, if you're a corporation, you move overseas, you don't have to pay any American taxes? You or I move overseas, we still have to pay American taxes. But if you're a corporation, you don't have to pay American taxes. Why would they be doing that unless they were intentionally transferring our wealth to other countries? And, of course, this is really what it's about. And then if you can get them to engage in a conversation, tell them about the Earth Charter. Tell them about point 10A that talks about equitable distribution of wealth between nations. This is what it's all about.
The Georgia Guidestones.
Yeah, if you get them down there.
One of them. And that gets them thinking.
And if you can, Chris, you know, we have pictures of the Georgia Guidestones on our website. Get them to our website, and we tell them all about the Georgia Guidestone.
Yep. Okay, thank you. Yeah, thanks,
God bless. Thanks very much for calling, Craig. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I'm just hoping that the people who listen to our programs regularly are getting an education so they can talk to other people. And, of course, rather than lecturing them about what's going on, if you can ask them questions. What do you think of the Georgia Guidestones and their message? And, of course, most people are going to say, what are the Georgia Guidestones? Well, see now they've engaged, and so you begin to tell them about the Georgia Guidestones. This mysterious monument in Elberton, but the media never tells you about it because they don't want you to know. And, of course, you want to raise the question that the media is controlled, because it really is. And they're not going to tell you really important things. And here's this massive monument down there known as the Georgia Guidestones, the American Stonehenge. And nobody knows who put up the money to build it. A man came into town, used a phony name. He called himself R.C. Christian. Many people think that was a code name for the secret society, Rosicrucian. And you know what that means, don't you? And of course, most people don't even understand the philosophy of the Rosicrucians or the secret nature of this society, or their tie into the Illuminati, or their tie into the Templars, or their tie into the ancient mystery religions, the modern-day manifestation of Gnosticism. Most people have no idea what this is all about. But there, on a hill just northeast of town, is the Georgia Guidestones, at four the massive chunks of granite, each one about 19 feet tall, and held together in the center by something known as the Capstone. And there are certainly engraved on these four slabs in eight different languages are 10 commandments that come from the dark side. R.C. Christian said he was part of a secret society. but nobody knows what the secret society was. And, of course, you can go up on the Internet. You can, if they get their curiosity, they go to our website or other websites and begin to read about the Georgia Guidestones. And maybe sometime we'll do a whole treatise on it because we got so much information from the library there where that actually, had all the clippings. And did you know, for instance, that the UFOs go hovering over the Georgia Guidestones, at least on one occasion? The UFOs were sighted hovering over it. They have naked parties there and satanic ceremonies and witches. And why would all these people go into the Georgia Guidestones? Because they're an emblem of the supernatural battle that's going on today. And this is where the people from the dark side come for their celebrations. And point number one of the Georgia Guidestones is maintain the population at 500 million in constant balance with nature, which means they plan to kill off over 95% of the world population. Ask people how they feel about that. Do they think it's a good idea? Would they like to volunteer their children? I dare say they wouldn't. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and so basically we were talking about the Georgia Guidestones, and we can continue talking about them because they were dedicated, I believe, in about 1980. They were built in 1980, maybe dedicated in 1981. They've been there now for, almost 17 years, 27 years, I should say. And, of course, there have been a few people there, a few ministers have written to me off and on, saying that they were trying to get rid of the Georgia Guidestones, try to, of course, get them taken out, destroyed. And in each instance, something terrible has happened to those ministers, and they no longer have their churches because, you see, there's a powerful spiritual force behind the Georgia Guidestones. The Ten Commandments, of course, are written in English and Russian and Hebrew and Arabic and Chinese and Swahili and in two other languages. And then, of course, they talk about a new spirituality. They talk about population control. They talk about abortion. They talk about the world government, and this is really what it's all about. That is the goal of the secret societies, as it always has been, going back for over 5,000 years to the time of Nimrod. What they want is a world government. What they want is a world religion. Of course, they've always wanted to destroy Christianity. We see the manifestations of what's going on today, as we see the call for a new world economic organization, a new world economic organization or structure, and that, of course, they want a global currency. But it is this intense hatred of Christianity that has always, of course, bound all of the secret societies and the descendants of the ancient mystery religions together. Why do they hate Christianity? Because they worship a different God. And, of course, this is all, you can actually read about it. This is the basis of the Kabbalah, which is Jewish mysticism, but the Gnosticism is Christian mysticism. And there is a belief, and you go to the encyclopedia or up on the Internet, and you'll find that these people worship a different God. Until you understand that these people worship Lucifer, that they believe Lucifer is the real God. Why? Because he gives you freedom. He said he doesn't have all these restrictions on what you do. He gives you freedom to do whatever you want, but of course at a terrible, terrible price, because you have to repudiate the God of the Bible. And they honestly believe that the God of the Bible is an inferior God. He was, of course, the son of Sophia. And of course, you need to get all of this information. You need to understand it. Read up on Gnosticism. You'll understand what's really going on today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course it's a little difficult when we don't have our regularly scheduled guests, but it always works out. We appreciate the people who called and those who listened as we try to outline during these open line programs what's really going on in the world today. And of course we do hope if you'd like to know more about the Georgia Guidestones, you go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can see the pictures of the Guidestones, what the Ten Commandments are that come from the dark side. And one of these days, when we have a time, I'll write out the whole history of the Georgia Guidestones, and that they are a cult monument. They're comparable to the British Stonehenge. In fact, they're many times referred to as the American Stonehenge, and they're simply an emblem, a tangible emblem of this spiritual battle that is being waged today for the souls of men. And, of course, for the survival of Christian civilization, we're losing rapidly, because most people don't even know that there's a battle going on for the souls of men and the destruction of Christian civilization. Well, we hope many of you want to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, listen to our talk on the Forbidden Secret, which will explain so much of what we've talked about. That's the Forbidden Secret. There's a syllabus that comes with that. Our talk on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that. Certainly, we are offering Lindsay Williams' DVD, The Energy Non-Crisis, along with our syllabus on the oil deception. The oil deception. Before long, we'll have my talk available. It was a talk we gave, of course, at the last conference about 2 weeks ago. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to get the DVDs on The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, and, of course, The Riddles in Stone. You certainly want to get the DVD put up, and the man who produced those two DVDs, his name is Chris Pinto, he's a good friend. He gave a talk at our conference 2 years ago. It's called The Atlantis Connection. It's a DVD, and you want to get it, you want to watch it. And certainly, we also have a DVD by Constance Cumby, who goes into the same subject, and her experience starting in 1980 when she suddenly realized that there was a movement in America which was dedicated to the worship of Lucifer. And it's called the New Age Movement, and there are millions of disciples in America today. Some of them work at the highest levels of our society. So certainly the DVD is simply Constance Cumby. And, of course, you can get that and my four-tape set of my interviews with Constance Cumby. And they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Certainly, you need to get the DVD. They sold their souls for rock and roll. It's the story of the music industry, and the people have actually gone over to Satan in worship of Satan. But you have to understand the same thing's happening in government, in the military, in the foundations, in education. Yes, and even in medicine, I fear. And of course, that they sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. We're moving into very difficult times. And if you haven't yet got your long-term storage food, I can tell you that the prices have been dramatically cut, Ready Reserve food that we've been carrying, and certainly it's an excellent time to get it now. These are good products. We know the background of them. We don't know the origin of many of the competitors, but we do know David Sipley of Ready Reserve Food. If you'd like their catalog and the new price list, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, because we want you to buy the product to us. And because it will help Radio Liberty. If you'd like to get the Big Berkey or Berkey Black Berkey water filter, you really need to have something on hand so you can have potable water. And then, of course, you certainly would want to lay in a health supply of products, vitamins, minerals, the herbs and other things will help you to keep your immune system up in the very difficult times that lie ahead. And ladies and gentlemen, we're moving into the most difficult times of your life, as the very structure of our society begins to crumble and we move into a period of chaos and crisis. And, of course, we ask you to pray, of course, for America, for our leaders, for our ministers, and pray for Barack Obama, that God will touch his heart, and please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
There are many people asking questions. afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great big beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Yah's creation. It is finally Take a Deep Breath Day, Friday, November 7th, 2008. And just when we thought it was finally going to be over, yes, the Obama-McCain election news, election, Obama, election, election, Obama, election, we thought it was over. Guess what? They're just getting started. Oh, my gosh. Yet another reason, campers, to ask the reason, ask the question, or demand an answer. Where is the line in the sand? This is Dave.
And Joyce. And the reality show continues. That's all it is, ladies and gentlemen. It is a reality show. I'll tell you why I know that CNN is changing its direction after the break, because there's a whole mindset that is starting to appear that the public is going to be forced to watch. That is, if you watch television, if you watch the cable news networks. And we'll talk about that, because I really see an agenda coming.